welcome to Contact Chi. Today's episode is composed of two memorable moments from our 5784 High Holiday services in which lay leaders took to the Bema. In the first excerpt from our Colney Dre service, Tim Graves spoke about his own personal painful journey of teshuva as he embraces sobriety. In the second, from our Yom Kippur service, Jackie delivered a drosh about the Bring Chicago Home campaign to combat homelessness. In both sermons, we find that the key to changing the world is often changing ourselves. Now, take it away, Tim.
We have made many mistakes, but you are full of compassion. Our days are like a fleeting shadow, but yours and your years will never end. Before we go into our first vidui, come on up, Tim. You can take a seat. We'll be standing again as we strike our chests, but as you listen to Tim talk, you can take a seat. Tim Graves has been a beloved community member for many years, and he's going to share a little of his story with you tonight as an intro to our first confessional.
Hi, everyone. I am Tim. I'm a Chi in Jewish spaces, and I'm a proud member of this community and have been for many years. And if this was about 2 or 3 years ago, and we weren't in pandemic mode and we were able to get together, I wouldn't be standing here. I'd be sitting out there, almost assuredly buzzed, maybe even drunk already, and I would probably have a bottle stashed somewhere in the building. Because that's what drunks do. We drink. And because at that time, a bottle was never too far away, and I didn't care where I was or who I hurt when I was drinking. See, when I came to Michigan 9 years ago, I wasn't even Jewish, but I was a broken man. I had given up on organized religion in my youth. I didn't believe in a God per se, and I definitely didn't believe in a God that would love someone like me. I didn't believe there was a spark of redemption available for myself, the universe, the power I choose to call God, put Rabbi Lizzie and Mishkan into my life at a time when I was struggling to be fully in recovery and find myself trying to figure out how to be a good father amongst many other challenges. Over the ensuing 9 years, with many bumps in the road, 5 trips to rehab, the last one made possible by our Mishkan community and a blessing that is Beit Teshuvah, a Jewish recovery community in LA, and with the continued love and support of this congregation and the people who love me, I'm standing here before you, a man on the mend. I'm standing before you as someone who has forgiven themselves and who has been forgiven by many of those I have hurt. I stand here today as a representative of those of us in the community who are struggling or have beaten substance use disorder, those of us who are neurodivergent, who live with mental health issues, those of us who are queer or questioning, those who are parents, those who may not be in any of those things, but who may have missed the mark this past year in some ways, and those of us who are wondering whether we will ever find love again because of our past transgressions. Those of us who in some ways persist and refuse to quit moving forward and are willing to do the work to return to the path. The road that led me here began with something so simple and yet so powerful. I had to admit out loud that I was not on the path that the universe, God, had intended for me. I had to confess out loud to the people around me all of the things I had been doing, all of the lies, all of the things that I was ashamed of and worked so hard to keep hidden, but couldn't hide from God and could no longer hide from others. The secrets I had kept only served to reinforce a disconnection I felt from the world, from people I loved and God, and reinforce the worthlessness and the self-loathing that made me believe that I was not worthy of anyone's love, especially God's. But the secrets began to be too great, too heavy for me to carry. I had to let them out, or I felt like it would explode. And once I started talking, I did explode. It all came pouring out. As it came out, something amazing happened. The world began to open up for me. I had made my world so small. I had been so alone filled with fear, cutting off everyone, including God. And now as I confess my deepest, darkest secrets, I was all of a sudden connected again, connected to the people around me and connected to God. Once I confessed, I could begin to make true teshuvah. In recovery, we say we are only as sick as our secrets. For me, I know that today that is true. My confessions 2 years ago were things you can only hear in church basements, surrounded by other alcoholics and addicts, secret drinking, weekly binges, not caring about my future, not caring about the damage I was doing to my body or my family, and I had a heart attack at 45 to prove it. Drank again. Lying to loved ones, lying to Rabbi Lizzie and the other clergy, and live lying to myself. Today, my confessions are not as juicy. I have lied to my mother about why I can't take her call. I have stolen from the self-checkout at Jewel, accidentally, and justified it. I have sinned the sin of Lashon Hara, misusing words against others. I have sinned the sin of Lashon Hara, misusing words against myself. So now that you know about me, let's talk about us. Why are we confessing out loud to sins we didn't do ourselves? Our Machzor uses collective language to describe every sin we name when we confess out loud. We have transgressed. We have stolen. We have slandered. Why aren't I responsible for only my own stuff? I believe that when we wake up every morning and decide to be Jewish, we take up on us not only the mitzvah, but also the responsibility and obligations of being part of the community at large. Our transgressions become a part of the community's collective transgressions, which in turn become a part of the larger global Jewish community's transgressions. Rav Isaac Luria, the 16th century Kabbalist, wrote that confession is written in the plural. We have sinned. Because all Israel is considered like one body and every person is a limb of that body. So we confess to the sins of all the parts of that body. That makes sense to me. But there's something even deeper at work here. I think that a lot of us walk around all year in our bubbles. We go about our lives as individuals, loosely connected to our community, a Shabbat service here, a small group there, maybe a Shabbat dinner every once in a while. Maybe none of those things throughout the year. The we can be lost in the whirlwind that is me. Maybe if you are like I used to be, you don't think you deserve to be part of a community, a society that you will have to go it alone forever. Maybe you think you don't need to ask for help or lean on other people. I believe today that is not the case for me or anyone in this room. We are Israel, the people of the book, and none of us are alone. By standing together for confession, we are reminded that we are a part of that body Rav Luria wrote about. By standing together and not making individuals stand before the community and confess individually how they missed the mark, like I just did, we are saying, I am with you. I don't want you to feel shame or embarrassment. So I'll say your sins and you'll say mine, and we are in this together because we are part of one body. This collectivism is a power that I rely on to keep going some days. It is a power I use to gird myself when I must apologize and make teshuva, and it's so hard. The knowledge that no matter what happens, that I am a part of something bigger, that I deserve to be here, and there are people in this community who have also missed the mark. We all miss the mark, and today we will come together and we will say, we have sinned. So when you stand here tonight and beat or gently tap your chest, do it proudly as a member of this community, as a part of the global Jewish community, and remember, Kol Yisrael, Erevim Ze Bezeh, all of us are responsible for each other. Thank you.
You got applause, Tim. You got applause. Yasher Koach.
I am excited to introduce Jackie Rasner. You may know her as a parent at Mensch Academy. or from her work with the J Baby program at Federation. She's also one of the lead organizers of our work with the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs and on their board. Mishkan has a working relationship with the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs that works to end poverty and anti-Semitism in this city. And so I'm going to hand the mic in a moment to Jackie, who's going to share some of her own story. And then a specific issue that touches us all, that this year we have an opportunity to think about how to affect positive change in. And I guess what I want to say is last week, for those of you who are here, you heard me talking about the importance of staying in relationship, even when you might find yourself disagreeing with a particular point or a particular thing you might hear in community. And so if, as you're listening, you find yourself nodding in agreement, wonderful. If you find yourself asking questions or maybe even with sitting with doubting skepticism or feelings of like, wait a second, consider this the beginning of a conversation, please. I invite you to consider this the beginning of a conversation that we'll be in as a community and that Jackie's going to open up for us. So thank you, Jackie. Thank
you. Thanks, everyone, for letting me be here. I'm just going to say from the start, I've never done this before in front of so many people, so I'm very nervous, and I thank you for being here with me. I have a confession to make. This seems like the right day to do it. While I've always been someone who cares about social justice, the issue of homelessness didn't get much of my attention until I saw it through the eyes of my children. I grew up in Naperville, an area that had very few visibly homeless people, and my only interactions with people who were unhoused was when they were being labeled panhandlers or beggars, and we averted our eyes when we went on trips to the city. But making the conscious choice to raise my children in Chicago meant that I was also raising them with the daily awareness that not all people have homes. The drive to preschool included passing folks daily who were asking for assistance, money, or food. And on most days, with a lack of resources in my car and three screaming children, I just drove by, my head dipped in shame. Now, if I've learned anything about parenting, I know that my kids learn more from watching what I do than from what I say I do. So from the time they were born, I committed to always returning the grocery cart, saying please and thank you, and offering anyone who enters our home a drink and a snack. I thought I was doing a good job, but I was ignoring what I was teaching them right in front of me on our daily drives. So to right this wrong, I reached out to Lincoln Park Community Services, a shelter near our home that houses 120 individuals, and I wanted to get involved. For several years in a row, we threw them a Hanukkah party that no one really asked for, but we showed up and celebrated. We made meals for the shelter, often in community with other Mishkanites. We lived near the Old Town Art Fair, and we used our lucrative lemonade stand spot to raise money for the shelter. And it felt like, okay, here, this is the thing we're doing. This is how we're showing up and we're being good citizens. And this is how we're teaching B'Tselem Elohim, that each person is created in the image of the divine, that each human is worthy of dignity and being seen. Or as I would whisper into their little ears on walks with them strapped to my chest, every person is a person. It wasn't until I reached out to Mishkan, wanting to get more involved in the justice work in the fall of 2020, that I realized we were trying to solve a gushing wound with a small Band-Aid, that meals and parties and donations are not going to fix a housing crisis affecting 68,000 people. But more on that in a minute. I initially reached out because, like a lot of white people in the summer of 2020, I was feeling a lot. Guilt and shame and confusion and the strong desire to do something. It took the murder of George Floyd to make me fully understand what Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel meant when he said, "In a free society, some may be guilty, but all are responsible." I know I'm not the only one who was shaken awake, suddenly wondering what my responsibility is in all of this. It propelled me on the journey of learning how to be an active anti-racist. And with a group of fellow white Mishkanites on Zoom, we worked our way through the book, Me and White Supremacy, Combat Racism, Change the World, and Become a Good Ancestor by Leila Saad. While we worked through the book, we were forced to reckon with the privilege we hold and the systems that have upheld it. Now, Jews come in all colors and races, but here in America, a large number of Jews, we look white. We considered our white privilege in this group and how that intersected with our Jewish identity. How were our parents and grandparents both oppressed and lifted up through America's systems? What were we, white Jews, offered that others were not? And what, if anything, are we willing to give up to create equity? Or how uncomfortable am I willing to be in my quest to be an anti-racist? I think in a lot of ways, this is what Isaiah is here to teach us when he asks, is this the fast that I desire, a day to share? Nope, he says, this is the fast I desire, to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless into your home and provide clothing for those who lack it and to not turn away from people in need. Or as I would paraphrase, the good thing you do on Yom Kippur is not the physical fasting, and the good thing we did in book club wasn't having hard conversations. These uncomfortable things are how we learn that we all need to do big, hard things. At book club, and today, we wrestle with challenging feelings and memories. We push through and atone for the mistakes that we have made. But it's what we do in the remaining 364 days that teaches us about who we really are. I thought that showing up as an anti-racist would involve speaking up when someone said a coded remark or a tasteless joke. I thought it would mean not scrolling past a racist Facebook post and instead actually addressing it. Honestly, I thought I was already doing a great job. Turns out I was only scratching the surface. At the same time as the book club, I was beginning to dabble in Mishkan's social justice work and get involved on the economic justice team. They were focused on Chicago's housing crisis, one that has only gotten worse in the past 3 years. According to the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, approximately 68,000 Chicagoans are homeless, defined by not having an address to call their own and not having the ability to obtain one. 3/4 of the homeless population are people of color. 36,000 are black. 18,000 children are homeless. That's 10 Copernicus centers filled with children who don't have a home. A full quarter of Chicago public school students will experience homelessness. Now that number includes the homelessness we see in tent cities and from our cars or in shelters. But it also includes the homelessness we don't see. Those who are doubled up, staying somewhere that they are not on their lease or the mortgage. These folks may have a roof over their head for the night, but they don't know for how long they will be welcome. At any moment, they could be asked to leave. They don't experience the safety one feels in their own space. The feeling of unwinding, of turning off, of being their true, authentic self. You can't do that without a home to call your own. This was a problem, but the economic justice team, in partnership with JCUA, One Northside, labor unions, and other community organizations, had a proposal. Their proposal was the Bring Chicago Home campaign, a proposal to raise the real estate transfer tax on real estate purchases over $1 million to create a dedicated annual funding source to combat homelessness. Thank you. Money that would go directly to creating more affordable housing with wraparound services. 2 weeks ago, we introduced the ordinance at City Hall, and next week, City Council will vote, and then they send it to the people. Bring Chicago Home will be a referendum on our ballots in March of 2024, and each one of us registered Chicago voters will have a vote. Now, the connection between the Bring Chicago Home initiative and anti-racist work, to me, is clear. Chicago's history of racial inequality and redlining has led to a deeply segregated city of haves and have-nots. And in the face of the huge inequality in access to housing, I found myself leveling up in my discomfort, agitating my alderperson, being interviewed by the news regarding my support, leading chants on a megaphone, delivering a sermon on Yom Kippur. In October of 2022, I agreed to attend a rally at City Hall during Mayor Lightfoot's budget address. I was surprised to find out that morning that we would actually be inside the building, setting up tents and representing what we dubbed the 51st Ward, made up of the 68,000 unhoused Chicagoans. I was nervous we would get in trouble or there would be police interference, and I had to dig deep to find courage. Every uncomfortable action I take for Bring Chicago Home is rooted in the lessons I learned from Leila Saad. I am deliberately choosing to do big, hard things in service of equity for Chicagoans. The easiest thing for me to say today is learn from this journey. Find the cause that speaks to you. Start reading books, learning more, and doing something to address that problem. And yes, you should absolutely do that. There are so many ways to get involved at MishCon and help to repair the world. You can serve at the Uptown Cafe or the Beth Emmett Food Kitchen. You can collect and distribute items for refugees, just to name a few. But only systemic change will end the need for these services in the first place. And there is a moment here to make that kind of systems-level change. If you are a registered Chicago voter, you have the opportunity to change history. Because it's rare that you actually get the chance to vote on the policy you want to see. But on March 19th, we will head to the polls and vote on the Bring Chicago Home referendum. And I am asking you to vote yes. And I understand that for some of us, it is voting against our interests. Because it is accurate to say that I will one day purchase or sell a home over $1 million, and I will be required to pay an increased real estate transfer tax. But it is not accurate to say that I'm voting against my interests, because I'm interested in a whole lot more than how much money I pay in taxes. I'm interested in living in a city that ensures that all children have the benefits that mine take for granted, a safe place to sleep at night, a place to shower and be clean, and the consistency and routine that comes from having a home to call their own. I'm interested in allowing seniors to age with dignity in the comfort of their own space and not on the street. I'm interested in living amongst folks who have access to the mental health care and drug addiction treatment they require. I'm someone who believes that housing is a human right, and it's in my interest to live in a city where that is true. Now, I know there's pushback to the ordinance. I know that the commercial real estate industry is still recovering from the blow of COVID. I know that people are concerned about how this will affect not just them as individuals, but the real estate industry as a whole in Chicago. They're suggesting that housing and rent prices may rise, and that may drive people out of Chicago. We believe that these objections are exaggerated, but it is true that there are unknowns. But what is known is tonight, 68,000 Chicagoans are homeless. Tonight, 18,000 children do not have a bed to call their own. We know that something must be done to right this wrong, and we have an opportunity right now to take a huge step towards ending homelessness in Chicago. Let's take it. Now, if you'd like to talk with me more, I'm heading from here to the social justice table out in the lobby, and I'd love to talk with you and continue the conversation. Or you can feel free to follow up with me after the holiday. All those beautiful staff from MishCon know how to get in touch with me. And if you're moved by what you heard, and I hope you are, and you want to get involved, please stop by the table and sign up, and we will follow up with you. Because the truth is, we all want to end homelessness. And it's a fair question to ask, who should pay for that and how? Will it hurt to vote yes? Maybe. Will it cost a little more for some of us to buy a house? Yes. It will hurt a little, just like today hurts a little. But in both cases, you are getting the chance to do something and make change. Today is the Holy Day of Atonement, a day to reflect on your choices, assess them, and make goals to do differently in the new year. Today, you are creating something, a vision of the best version of your future self. I invite you to consider the voting booth a time machine that puts you right back in this moment. Because 6 months from now, it will be hard to remember the changes that we all committed to. But on March 19th, you have the direct opportunity to make Isaiah proud, put your words into action, and live out how you know how to be the best of yourself. And if we can all do that, I believe we will see a better Chicago for us all. Thank you.
Shabbat Replay is a production of Mishkan Chicago. Our theme music was composed and performed by Kalman Strauss. You can always see where and when our next service will be on our calendar. There's a link in the show notes. And if you appreciated the program, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I know you've heard it before, but it really does help. On behalf of Team Mishkan, thank you for listening.